Well, good morning and welcome back. A brand new year is a great time to commit to making our marriage stronger. And joining us with some godly advice for couples is author and speaker Arlene Pellicane. Good morning, Arlene.
Good morning, Bill.
Is it true that you were just a guest preacher at your home church in California?
Yeah, it's a neat opportunity that Pastor Jeff Bronner here at Bonita Valley Community Church in San Diego has given. So he's doing a series on unstuck, getting unstuck in the new year. And so he asked me to fill the Sunday to talk about how to have an unstoppable marriage to get unstuck, kind of break some of those bad habits that you've carried over from last year and the years previous, probably. And how can you experience a better marriage in 2017?
So what do you mean by an unstoppable marriage?
Yeah, I talked about this because I don't mean like, okay, we've been married for 50 years. We never quit, but we don't like each other. And we barely talk to each other. And all we do is sit and eat meals together. And that's about, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. It's not just a marriage that continues, but it's a marriage that continues and that gets sweeter over time, that you get closer to your spouse over time, the companionship is stronger, the love, affection, respect, all those things are stronger. Because any of us, if the Lord graces us and we are 80, 90, and we're still alive with our spouse, how wonderful to have that sweetness, that twinkle, that enjoyment, that comfort of having that person with you. And that's the kind of marriage I think all of us want.
That's beautiful. Now, like any good preacher, you had three points in your sermon.
Yes. Not 10, not 12. Trying to get people out to lunch. Yeah.
Okay. Your first point was the unstoppable marriage requires obedience and effort. And unfortunately, that seems to be somewhat of a rare commodity in many marriages today.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of times I looked at that first couple, right? Adam and Eve. And what kind of marriage advice did God give to Adam and Eve? You know, there's a plethora of marriage advice. I'm giving you some right now, and you could look at thousands and thousands and thousands of books and titles. So what would God have told them? And really, his instructions were not about, like, make sure you listen to your spouse for 2 hours a day, or make sure you make love to your husband on a regular basis. Those are good things, but that wasn't God's advice. His instructions were, take care of the garden, and whatever you do, don't touch that tree. And it was a matter of obedience, right? It was obedience. And many times in our marriage, we'll think, well, he didn't meet my needs. She didn't meet my needs. They made me feel, like the first question you say is, well, how did that make you feel? You know, and really to turn that and say, well, what does God's word say about this? How can I obey God's word in this moment? When my husband acts in a loving way, how can I obey God's word to continue to respect him, even if he's like that? When my wife is going crazy and she's ornery and she's moody and I don't get her, how can I act in a loving way because I know God's word commands me to love her? So if we focus on how can I obey God's word about my marriage, it really changes, of course, our behavior, because instead of being guided by our feelings, we're guided by this law. And of course, that's hard to do, right? Who can keep being loving and keep respecting when the other party is acting absurdly? But that's why it requires effort. It's that effort that says, I know if I'll put in this kind of effort, I know my marriage will be better.
And I think we would also add patience, because even with obedience and effort, oftentimes things don't turn around immediately. And we have to hang in there sometimes with a spouse who may be depressed or maybe going through job stress or a health crisis. You name it. Those things can really wreak havoc on a marriage.
You know, I was doing an exercise workout because, you know, here we are in January, and it's this 20-minute, you know, power DVD kind of thing. And about 10 minutes into it, I'm like, man, I am exhausted. So I literally hit the fast forward button, and the people in it, you know, they're doing their jumping jacks real fast. They're doing their little curls fast. And I'm thinking, oh, good, I can do this. It's two of each. And I literally fast forwarded through the last half of the workout, hit play during the cool down, and did the stretch with them. And I thought, how pathetic am I that I want this fixed so quickly that I will fast forward through an exercise DVD that's only 20 minutes long. You know, that is the approach we take to our relationships, that when they don't work out fast, that it's like, well, this didn't work. So we're used to that quick fix. We're used to the three easy steps. We're used to, like, no payments until February, you know, whatever. We're used to this easy way, and relationships don't work that way. Our most important relationships, they often take a lot of effort and patience, like you talk about.
Have you seen some couples just in your life or your ministry where a husband or wife has hung in there with their spouse during a difficult stretch and they've seen a payoff at the end?
Yes, I have. I had this dear woman talk to me once that always stuck in my mind, that her husband was unemployed. They were going through a very hard time. She was the one working. And then when she came home, she had to do all the things with the kids still. And her girlfriends were just like, man, your husband is good for nothing. Like, you work all day, then you got to go home and take care of the kids. And she purchased my book, 31 Days to a Happy Husband. And her girlfriends just thought that was crazy. Like, why in the world would you want to make him happy when you're the one doing all the work in the relationship anyway? And she saw such disdain and contempt in her girlfriends. And she realized, I have that kind of contempt also, and I have to fight that. And so she got the book and she started doing these practices, like kissing her husband when she came home. And he was so taken aback because they hadn't kissed affectionately like that for a really long time. And over just a course of a few days, she saw this transformation in him, that the house would be more picked up when she came home. And one day he was cooking dinner for them and she was using onions, which she loves and he doesn't. And she saw this change happen to him because she changed first. So, you know, as Emerson Eggerich says in his book, Love and Respect, that, because you wonder who's supposed to go first, he talks about, like, the more mature person go first, which is, I think, kind of funny because you always want to consider yourself as the more mature person. So go first. If you're waiting around for your spouse to do something, no, go ahead and start acting in a godly, obedient to God way to your spouse. And those benefits will come, and they may not come soon, but they will eventually, I believe.
Our guest is Arlene Pellicane. She is the author of several excellent books on marriage and parenting. You can find out more about Arlene's work at arlenepellicane.com. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on the Faith Radio Network. Well, good morning. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's Bill Meyer here with my friend Arlene Pellicane. She is an author and speaker and has several excellent books on marriage and parenting. She had a chance to be the guest pastor at her church last week, and she gave a three-point sermon, as all good pastors do. We talked about the first point earlier, and the sermon was on the unstoppable marriage. And the second point in your sermon, Arlene, is that the unstoppable marriage places the husband-wife relationship over the parent-child relationship. That is something that I am constantly coming back to here on the morning show, that in our very child-centered culture, the best thing you can do for your kids is to strengthen your marriage.
Yeah, we saw a lot of people squirm about this subject and a lot of elbows going both ways. You know, because before you have children, all that affection, all that attention goes, you know, between the husband and the spouse. But when that little baby comes into the picture, it's like, man, who are you, you know, to the other adult? And that affection goes to that little cute baby. But I tell you what, whether it's a cute baby or a toddler that needs a lot of attention or a 20-year-old that you're trying to help out, sometimes our kids can take the front seat and then our marriages take the back seat. And really, when you look at it, the Bible talks about who becomes one flesh, the husband and wife. They become one flesh to be one for life. The parent doesn't become one flesh with the child. That's nonsense, because the child is supposed to grow up and have their own family. And yet we act many times like we are more bonded, more allegiant, more loyal, more servant-like to our kids than our spouses. Psychologist John Roseman has this in one of his books, and I think it's so telling. And he asks this question: of the time you spend in your family during the week, what percentage of your time is spent in the role of a parent, as a mother or father, and what percentage is spent in your role as a husband or wife? And you can ask that of yourself, all the listeners, and then if you have adult children, can kind of think of what did I used to do, and maybe with your grandchildren. And, of course, in the audiences that psychologist John Roseman talks to, he says typically they'll say 90% parenting and 10% spousing, you know, as your husband and wife, that occasional date night, et cetera. And he says, well, no wonder. This is the empirical definition of a child-centered family, and that ideally what you want to shoot for is 75% of your time spousing, doing things in your family as a husband and a wife, and 25% parenting. You know, and so most people are like, whoa, like how could that ever happen? What would my kids do without me? Well, they'd kind of grow up and become more individual and like learn how to do things. You know, so my husband, James, usually after dinner, we all like clean the kitchen up together. Well, a few days ago, James was like, okay, kids, you clean up the kitchen. And he takes my hand and we sit on the couch. We don't usually do that. Like usually we're in with the kitchen, right? So we're on the couch, we're like snuggling and he's like talking to me and stuff. And I felt like it was scandalous. Like, what are we doing on the couch while our three kids are in the kitchen? But it was like the nicest thing ever. And I was like, why don't we do this all the time? This is fantastic. And what does that show? It shows the kids, hey, we pay the mortgage. You guys help out with the dishes. You know, that is not a bad lesson to learn. You got, you know, I've made the meal. You guys can do the dishes. You know, it's not really, you know, as a parent, especially as mothers, we'll think, oh, that's too much to ask of our children. But you look at that and you think that through. It's like, no, that's not too much to ask of a second grader, a fifth grader, and a seventh grader. They can take care of the kitchen. And then it gave James and I this time at the end of the day. But it's so foreign to us to value that marriage relationship practically in our day's time. It's so foreign to us because we're so used to, we drive around the kids, we'll pick them up, we'll take them to school early for practice, we'll stay up late, we'll help them with their homework, we'll do all this stuff for them. But when our spouse asks us to do something, we're like, what? How could you expect me to do that? Right. Because that role is skewed. And if we started acting like, you know what, my spouse is going to be the one that I'm with until the day I die, I better invest in that relationship. And like you said, there's nothing that's going to comfort a child more than seeing that that mother and father are strong, they're in love, that child's going to be just fine.
You know, it's so countercultural, but it's such an important concept. And I'm hoping that our listeners who have young kids or elementary school age kids, even teenagers, heard what you just said, because it's critical.
Yeah, we tend, because we really tend to underdo with our spouses and we overdo with our kids.
Mm. Arlene, the third point in your three-point sermon was the unstoppable marriage welcomes instruction. What type of instruction do we need and where should we get that instruction?
You definitely want godly instruction. You want something that falls in line with the Bible. You want also, you know, to look at the respected people in your life, whether it's the couple, you know, maybe your parents or your grandparents, maybe an aunt or uncle, maybe someone you've seen at church that has really modeled a good marriage, and you welcome that instruction. You seek it out. You look for authors that resonate with you and that have a trustworthy marriage themselves, and you look at that and you welcome that. And the real point there is that I want to put the emphasis on the word welcome, because a lot of us, I remember Noelle, our middle child, you know, being the second child, you know, firstborn knows everything. So when she was like 3, 4, 5, her little saying was, I already know that. I already know that. I already know that. I say that. It was so funny. And lots of us through our lives, if we receive relational instructions, we'll be like in our mind, well, I already know that. Mm-hmm. You know, we bristle at it. I already know that. So you can go through life with that, I already know that attitude, and you typically don't learn a whole lot more and not much changes in your relationship. But if you'll switch that and say like, oh, tell me more about that, or I wasn't aware of that, or I'd be happy to learn about that. If you will just change that internal dialogue and welcome instruction in your life. My book, 31 Days to a Happy Husband, I'll have one woman walk by and say, oh, I've been married 16 years, and if he ain't happy by now, he'll never be happy.
Oh. So,
and that's a disposition that does not welcome instruction. And a few minutes later, a woman will walk by and she'll say, I've been married 41 years, and there's always something to learn. I'll take a copy for myself and my daughter.
Oh.
And there's someone who welcomes instruction. So to ask ourselves, are we humble enough to say, I will be open to instruction? And, you know, Proverbs 27:5-6, it talks about how better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted. And sometimes when our spouse says something that's hurtful to us, it's usually because it's true. And for us to remember that, okay, wounds from a friend can be trusted, that when my spouse brings something up that we need to address, that we need to change in the new year, help me not to bristle against that, but instead to say, what's true here? How can I obey God's word here? How can I act in a more loving and respectful way towards you? And if we're open to instruction, welcoming it, instead of trying to shield ourselves from any kind of instruction, you know, because we don't want to change, we don't want to be criticized. But if we welcome instruction, God will bless you and you'll grow. If you go to a marriage seminar with an open mind, when you go to read a book together about finances with an open mind, all those things of welcoming instruction will improve a marriage greatly.
Wow, some great points. Arlene Pelicane, thanks again for telling us how to keep our marriage unstoppable in 2017. Always love your work. And again, I want to recommend your website, arlenepelicane.com, to learn more about Arlene's books and maybe invite her to come to your church or conference to speak. So thanks, Arlene, and may the Lord bless you in this new year.
Thanks so much, Bill, for having me.